Hello world, welcome to another episode of the Sensory Corner. My name is Mark, I'll be your host for today, and this podcast is being brought to you guys by Senso Minds. Throughout this podcast, I'll be sharing my conversations with various OTs, SLPs, specialists, and even sensory parents within the special needs and sensory realm, in hopes that we can gain a healthier discourse as to what it's like for a child living in a world which wasn't made for them to truly learn, grow, and develop with sensory or special needs. Hopefully throughout this podcast, we can band together as a community to be able to solve problems, collaborate with one another, and hopefully at the end of the day, truly support children in their journeys to integrating into the world around them. Anyways, that's enough for me. My name is Mark. I'll be your host for today, and welcome to the Sensory Corner. So, I don't really start off my podcast this way. However, I just wanted to ask a question to all of the parents listening in. Does your child have a favorite food? And wait, hold up. Let me rephrase what I mean by favorite. What I mean by favorite is that is a food they absolutely love. One or two foods that you know, they will not let go of. But on the flip side, that means every other food which looks, feels, or tastes remotely different, they absolutely hate. They will reject it. They will throw it in your face, literally. They will scream. They will yell. They will cry or even melt down. Does that sound familiar? If it does, then you most likely have a picky eater on your hands. And that's what this episode's all about, picky eaters. And all the parents are probably wondering, Mark, I thought this was a sensory and special needs podcast. Why exactly are we talking about this? The reason being is because the why behind picky eaters oftentimes stems from sensory issues. And once we're able to understand that why, we're best able to support children in terms of their eating habits. Because look, being a picky eater has a bunch of negative consequences. And at the end of the day, as parents, we are always looking to ensure that our children are gaining a well-rounded diet, are getting all the nutrients they need in order to be able to have the energy they need to push through activities, ensure that their growth stays intact, and more so boost their immune systems, especially during these times. So to be able to help us out with this podcast, we brought in an OT of whom is also part of the Senso Minds family. Her name is Candace Peterson. She's an occupational therapist based out of Detroit, Michigan, and she specializes in drinking and feeding therapies especially. And on today's podcast, she'll be going over the why behind why your child may only want to eat fishy crackers or graham crackers or chicken nuggets or whatever it may be. But more so because she herself is a parent, she'll be going over some actionable and easy and feasible strategies you guys, yes, you guys, the parents, can implement at home. And look, they're not huge changes. They're just little tweaks here and there, which you can do on a day-to-day basis to ensure that your child can get closer and closer to gaining a much more well-rounded and healthier diet. Anyways, that's enough for me. I'm just going to jump right into this podcast.
A lot of times they just really are not open to trying new foods. So a lot of them have kind of established what their preferred foods are, and they're kind of stuck in those. You know, I only eat X amount of foods and I don't really want to try anything new. I'm not looking to change what I do. I'm not looking to add new foods in. So this is kind of my diet and I'm sticking with that. And they're very, very resistant to being exposed to new foods.
Definitely. So what, if we could put it into more concrete terms possibly to give parents a roadmap of sorts, what would determine a picky eater? Like, what are the main signs? So you said that they're very resistive to, you know, just trying anything really. Are there any other signs which parents should be looking out for within their child?
Yeah. So in my practice, we use an approach called the TUMI SOS approach. SOS stands for sequential oral sensory. And I really like this approach. I think it's very dynamic. And TUMI is a psychologist, and she came up with kind of the explanation of picky eaters being kids that eat less than 30 foods.
And less than 30 foods. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. And she says, she also divides that into categories. So 10, 10, and 10. So 10 starches, 10 fruits and vegetables, and 10 proteins. So we would like to see the child have a decent amount of foods in each category. And a lot of times you see kids come in and maybe they'll have 30 foods, but they're mostly starches. They're mostly snack type foods. And that's not a balanced diet. So we can't just simply say, oh, less than 30 foods. We have to divide them into those categories.
Okay. So you're ensuring that the child has some variety within their diet then. It's not just graham crackers and fishy crackers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Goldfish is a fan favorite amongst the kids that I see. So the other things would be, like we said, they're so rigid that they're not even willing to try a food, the same food that they always eat from a different brand. So it's like, I will only eat the yogurt from the purple container, and that's it. Do not try and give me another brand of yogurt. So that's how rigid they are. It has to look the exact same way every time. Like, you better cut my toast in a triangle every single time, or I'm not eating it. You know? Right?
That's so true, though. I remember looking back as a kid, my mom would get the off-brand Fruit Loops, and I would be like, absolutely no. And I'd toss the box over. I was four, by the way, guys. I don't do that now.
Forget about it. Forget those off-brand Fruit Loops. Exactly. That's what we're seeing. Yeah.
I'm forced to eat those now, though, because all the Fruit Loops are taken up in the grocery store.
Yeah. You can't find any Fruit Loops. I'm kidding. So lots and lots of rigidity. We don't want to look outside the box, right? We want to stay with what's comfortable. We like foods that are, they look the same every time, like goldfish, right? They look the exact same every single time. They never change. And I have some kids, if there is a broken goldfish in that box, they're not taking it. They're not eating it, right?
That's interesting. So is it more so the familiarity? I don't even know if I pronounced that right. The familiarity with that food. Hopefully I'm saying that right. I might need to talk to an SLP. But anyways.
with sensory, right? Like if you have a sensory issue that is causing the picky eating, that sameness is very comforting. Like I'm not going to be surprised with something that's going to be different. And if I'm getting goldfish out of the same box that looks the same every single time, there's no surprises there.
Okay. And see, that makes a lot of sense to me based on past conversations. It's just me kind of like looping in other conversations. I know we're talking about picky eaters and picky food, but something which has come a lot in conversations is that children like that routine. They like schedules. They like that continuity because especially when they don't really understand what's going on in the world or they can't process certain things, it's that routine which gives them some structure and some order within their life so that they they don't break down or melt down or anything of that nature. So I totally get that whole idea of the graham crackers and more so the fishy crackers because they all look the same and they give that sense of order to the child.
Yeah.
Wow. A really cool thing is the fact that you can involve a therapist with your child if they're a picky eater. I never thought of that. I thought, I see it too often within parents where if their child's a picky eater, they just try and force food down their child's throat. It's just a constant negotiation. And that can sometimes be really painful for parents. And yes, I do mean painful. So as a therapist, what are some strategies you would recommend to a parent, trying to get their child to try new foods, trying to increase their diet repertoire of sorts?
Yeah. So a lot of people you're right. A lot of people out there are just living with this. They're just dealing with it, either dealing with it and doing nothing or dealing with it and doing things that are not helpful and are causing so much stress. Right. So, they are bribing, right? First you try this piece of broccoli and then you get a cupcake. They are negotiating. You don't want to have three pieces of broccoli? Okay, then let's have two. Oh, not two? Okay, then one. Oh, okay, then have a half a piece of broccoli. And it's just this back and forth and it's not successful. There's forcing, like you said, there's threatening, and all of these things just increase stress, right? Just more and more stress around mealtimes. So first thing that I suggest is to just stop, stop those things because my guess is they haven't been super successful. Your child doesn't have a positive relationship with those foods that you're using the negative strategies around, right? They see them as the enemy. They see them as a food that they have to get through to get something better. They don't actually see them as a food that's safe. So I definitely always encourage, not using strategies like that, negative strategies like that. Also, decrease the amount that you're asking your child to do. So if you give them a plate for dinner and it has three foods on it and all three foods are foods that they don't really like that much, we are asking them to do something that's literally impossible for them. They're immediately overwhelmed. They're immediately stressed out. So how about giving them two foods that they really, really like and one food that's a little bit more challenging?
Definitely.
Yeah. So that automatically is like, oh, okay, maybe I can handle, you know, that one food that's a little bit new to me because I have these other two foods that I really, really like. So mm-hmm. immediate decreasing stress, right? Yes. In that situation.
Wow. I love that. I love how you decrease the expectations to ensure that there's a long-term gain mm-hmm. with respect to the relationship with food.
Yes.
Yeah. This is somewhat related, somewhat not. I know I keep going on side tangents, but I absolutely love this conversation. But only recently have I started going back into jogging, and you're wondering, okay, how does this relate to eating whatsoever? I remember hearing another podcast, another conversation where the person said that if you just go super, super hard the very first day of exercising and you push your body to the limits, you're extremely sore and you've had a really bad experience with it, the likelihood of you going back to exercise is going to plummet. And then you just shot yourself in the foot with respect to your productivity and more so your end goals with exercising. So they often say just try and take it easy each and every day, ease yourself into it, and get your body into that flow state. And how that kind of relates to this conversation is exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. It's getting children familiarized with that food over time, as opposed to just throwing three foods through vegetables, which they may not like whatsoever, right in front of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think you pointed to something else there, right? So if we're, what are we actually going to do to get the child to engage with that new food, right? Let's say that you're, you are engaging them to a new food, exposing them to a new food. So a lot of times we see parents set the food down and walk away. You know, the child is maybe eating on their own. It is so important that you eat with your child and that you're eating the same foods as they are. Because if they're getting different foods than you are, you're not able to model for them in interacting with the food. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to be eating, right? It can be smelling, it can be licking, it can be tasting, it can be taking a bite and spitting it out. It doesn't have to be eating, and it doesn't have to be not fun. It can be so much fun. It can be so much fun, right? So parents always say, well, okay, smell it, smell it. Smell that food, smell it. And what does the child do? You know, like, no way, I'm not doing this. This is stressful. How do we smell a food without us even realizing we're smelling it? Oh, how fun would it be if we took a sugar snap pea and we pretended that it was a mustache, right?
Interesting.
Mom has a mustache. You have a mustache. That is hilarious, right? And we're smelling the food. We don't even realize it. My favorite is Twizzlers, and you put them in the front of your teeth like you're a walrus. You know, and right there we're getting a little bit, we're getting the food in our mouth and we're potentially tasting it, and we don't even realize we're just having fun. And so we're modeling all this interaction for our child without even without them even realizing that we're working on a new food.
Definitely. I love how you've reframed modeling, though, in such a way where you're now just commenting on a food. You know, it's not trying to instruct the child to do this or do this. You're simply just commenting on what you're doing in hopes that the child is able to follow suit. And usually that's
exactly, that's exactly what you're doing. Yeah, you're not directing their interaction with the food. You're only directing your interaction with the food. So they're like, oh, well, mom or dad is just doing what they're comfortable with, and I'm just going to do what I'm comfortable with. And then all of a sudden the stress is gone, and we're all just having fun, and we're all learning about the food, and it's not this pressure to try the food that children are often feeling in their homes right now.
Definitely. I forgot what conversation I had. I think it was with an SLP. It was the fact that, you know, your child, they're super smart. They pick up on everything, and if they see that you're having a good interaction, a good relationship with the food, or a good or happy emotion is coming about from eating a carrot or something of that nature, they're going to think to themselves, okay, maybe I might get that same reaction too. So I'm going to try it as well. Obviously, it's not that cut and dry, but that's the theory which we're trying to get at here.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that, and then you've established a sense of trust, right? Like your child, right?
Absolutely.
They trust you. They say, okay, we're just going into this, and mom or dad or whoever's interacting with me is going to let me do whatever I am comfortable with. And so I can trust that they're not going to push me past where I'm comfortable. And that level of trust it increases the level of engagement with the food and it decreases stress, which I know we've talked about this before. Stress decreases appetite. So if we're increasing stress, we're decreasing appetite. If we're decreasing stress, we're increasing appetite. So that right there is a huge factor in whether or not the child is going to engage with the food.
Interesting. So you said, just to kind of recap that, because there was a lot of information packed into a little bit there. So it was expectations, modeling the food, and trying to gain that trust with that food, and more so with you. Are there any other strategies which you would recommend to parents, aside from, you know, the stereotypical negotiations and bribing
that
might revert to?
Well, so one big thing for the parents, I think the parents come in and they often have this high level of stress. And so the number one thing is they often find themselves trapped and they start out, like let's say we're doing a therapy session with food at home. They start out good and then they start to get increasingly stressed because their child won't interact with the food like they expect them to. Okay. So the new phrase that I've been using a lot is expose without expectation. And what that means, and what that means is you are going into this interaction with the food and with your child without expectation of what the child is going to do. So you have wiped your slate clean in your mind. You're saying, I'm just going to, you know, expose them to the food. I'm just going to present the food. And whatever they do is fine. And that way you don't come in and start getting stressed out as the child isn't interacting like you had thought they would. And that kind of frees you and takes the stress away and just allows you to enjoy the experience with your child.
Oh, wow. I love that mind shift change, which you're presenting to parents, because, you know, we started off this podcast saying that your child needs to have at least 30 foods, 10 starches, 10 vegetables, 10 this. And I can see how some parents might interpret that as, oh crap, my child doesn't have that 30 food repertoire. Mm-hmm. And then you now get into this mind state of, okay, now I need to get my child to eat 30. I need to get them up to that level. Mm-hmm. But once you put yourself into that mind state, you start projecting that onto the child.
Right.
And that already is, as you said, it's a high stress mentality. And that's going to translate to the child, and it won't get you the outcome or get the child the outcome they need to, you know, eat healthier, eat a more well-rounded diet.
Yeah.
I think I saw something on your story. You put pasta in front of your child. This is on her Instagram story. So by the way, follow her on Instagram. I'll plug everything into the description. how many times did you repeat that overall process of just, you know, exposing without expectation, just putting the food in front of your child?
That was an exciting one for me, because I have to say I'm a parent and I get the frustration and I do get there sometimes. I'm human. And even though this is what I do for a living, when it's your own kid, it can be hard. And so I exposed him 10 times before he actually ate the pasta.
Wow.
And everybody that messaged me in response to that was like, oh my gosh, 10 times. And I said, I know it sounds like a lot, but each time he took a little bit higher step to get to eating. You know, first he didn't even touch it. He just looked at it. Then he kind of, you know, touched it a little bit, maybe brought it up to his face. Then he would put it in his mouth and spit it out. Each time he got a little bit closer. And the time before this, he had taken one bite and that was it. And then this time he was literally shoving it in his mouth.
It was the cutest video ever.
He was all about it. Yeah. He was all about it. So it did. It took 10 times, and sometimes it takes more. And so I think that's what parents can't wrap their head around. Like, they try it maybe 3 times and they're like, oh, we're done. He doesn't like it. She doesn't like it. We're done. But it can take a lot of exposures.
Definitely. And obviously throughout those 10 times though, you're trying to implement the other strategies you were saying. So trying to model it, or did you just place it in front of the child? Okay.
No, cool. We do a lot of modeling, and we also, you can't do this necessarily with your therapist in session, but with your child at home, we have him feed it to us a lot. So we're like, can I have a bite of that? You know? So he takes it off of his tray, puts it in our mouth. He absolutely loves that. Thinks it's hilarious and so funny. And oftentimes he will take a bite after he feeds us a bite. Super, super powerful way to expose and engage with the food.
That's such a cool way to bond with your child too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never really thought of that. Can you feed me this?
Yeah.
That's a priceless connection you're making with your son. And I know for any parent out there.
Yeah, it's very fun.
So, okay. So those are really great strategies which parents can do at home with their child. I love everything we said thus far. But are there any basic changes which a parent can do during mealtime to decrease that stress? Because we've been talking about decreasing stress, you know, increasing that trust in the child and, you know, just reducing that anxiety in general. So how can parents actively do that at home?
So one thing that I really encourage is everybody sitting around the table. You wouldn't believe how much, with how busy we are, everybody's just kind of eating on the fly. And I get it. Now, right now, in this time, we're home. But when we go back to our normal schedules and life goes on as it used to, we tend to just eat when we can. And very rarely are people actually sitting down together and having a meal. And Toomey would call it the family meal. So everybody sits at the table and, you know, family style serving where you actually pass the food around the table and everybody serves themselves.
Yes.
Nobody does that anymore either. Nobody does that.
Yeah.
That is such a good strategy because you are even if your child doesn't eat the food, let's say your child's serving the parents, they're smelling the food. They're using a utensil to serve it. They're interacting with the food. So those family style meals cause an immediate increase in engagement with the foods. So I definitely suggest everybody sits down together and then it becomes this enjoyable social experience. Eating is incredibly social. And we can bring that back into the eating experience, into the home that may have become very stressful, it should make it so much more positive, right?
Definitely.
So that's something that sitting down as a family, we're able to model, we're serving each other food, we're having a social experience. That is by far the most powerful thing you do, even if you do it one time a day.
I love that perspective, how eating is a social experience. It's not just about ingesting food, trying to get your nutrients. Obviously, that's, especially within a fitness world, that's what everybody's focusing in on.
Yeah.
But it goes back to that old saying, like breaking bread with your enemy. Obviously, your child's not your enemy. I'm not trying to say that whatsoever, folks. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. The reason why that popped up into my head is because that little caption there stems from the fact that whenever you share food with somebody, it's a mutual experience. It's something of which is both positive on both ends. Mm-hmm. And it's a means of me being able to break the ice, you know, relieve any tension and be able to connect with other individuals. So you're right, that family experience is so important, especially when you're trying to get your child to eat certain foods.
Yeah. And a lot of these kids are very limited in the social aspect because some of them can't even eat at restaurants because they, they're so rigid about their food choices and they're so picky that it's difficult for them to go, for the family to go out to eat. So that social aspect is so important and so valuable and really an end goal for a lot of my kids in therapy is, man, we would just really love to go out to eat at a restaurant. And I'm like, I would love, you know, that for you too. So let's try and work towards that. So what foods can we expand so that your child can go eat at a restaurant and have that social experience?
Wow. That whole idea of family style eating as well, it goes back to one of your points. It's a low pressure way of being able to model eating food as well. Because when you have a whole family of individuals of whom, you know, every individual is just focused in on their meal, they're just eating. And you're looking at everybody, no one's focusing on you or no one's really focusing on the child. They're just focusing on their own meal and, and the child's seeing that and they want to be able to participate in that as well because we as human beings are social creatures.
Yeah.
We want to be able to be a part of that family of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would be when I would say, you know, definitely like you pointed out right there, don't focus on your child. Just eat together and just eat your food and don't talk about try this, try that. Do you want to try this? Do you want to try that? Just have the experience and that comfort level and that social experience will automatically decrease stress and increase your child's desire to engage with whatever food is presented to them.
Definitely. So on that same note of trying to present food to your child and hopefully trying to increase their diet repertoire, could we come up with a few specific strategies for parents to, you know, expand that for their child? Because obviously if they present something to their child and they already don't have a good relationship with the food and they might melt down, or they might have an aversion to the food, oftentimes it can be very hard to even introduce it in the first place. So are there certain things parents can do to be able to overcome that hump and future humps down the road?
So strategically doing this is one thing. So if your child has a hard time even tolerating the food in front of them, we say tolerate it outside their space. That would be the first step. If they can't even tolerate it in front of them, where can you put it where they will tolerate it? So maybe that's on the table, but not in their immediate space. So Toomey has something called the learning plate, which I really like. So that's where you put foods on a plate in the middle of the table, and each person interacts with the foods at their comfort level. So maybe your child only wants to talk about the food. That's fine. So they can assign characteristics to the food. That food is orange. That food is round. That food is bumpy. And maybe the parent says, you know what? Actually, I want to touch it with my fingers. You're right. It is bumpy. And then the other parent says, I actually kind of want to taste that. Guess what? It's salty. So we're putting the food outside of the child's space, not in their immediate space. They're still learning about the food and engaging with it in some way. And it's a step towards tolerating the next level, which would be in their immediate space. So we just have to take a step back and say, okay, we can't even put this food in front of the child. Where can we put it that will be safe for them? Or can we play with it in some way? Can we use cookie cutters and cut shapes out of the cheese? Can we spell our name, make letters and spell our name out of a food? Can we do something like that, that the child knows we're just playing and having fun? We're not even, there's not even a plan to eat this. We're just having fun with it.
Definitely. And again, it goes back to, you know, you did it again here. It's the whole idea of commenting on the food. You know, children observe. They learn through observation. They learn through, they're curious little individuals. And the thing I love about what you just said is, I think a misconception a lot of parents may have is they think that you need to ask questions to your child to get them to engage with something. But from a past conversation I had, asking a question to a child, especially when it comes down to food and something which they may be averse to, places a lot of pressure on them. You know, you put them on the spot. And as you said, you're now increasing that stress, decreasing that appetite, and you're now making that overall food experience, that relationship with the food, just a little more stressful and less fun for them.
Agreed. My favorite thing is when I say something to one of my clients when we're in a therapy session, you know, say, I'm going to use these pepperonis and make myself have silly eyes, right? And so I've got two pepperonis over my eyes. We've got a mirror in front of us. We always use a mirror. And the child is not quite there yet, right? So they come up with something different. Or maybe they do something even better and they say, you know what, I'm going to pretend the pepperoni is a clown nose, and they put it on their nose and boom, we've got smell, right? And I did not ask them one time to do anything with the food. I just did something on my own and we were silly and we were fun. And the whole time they're enjoying that experience.
Definitely. Wow. No, I used to love playing with my food. No, as a kid, I only used to eat Lay's, and my mom didn't buy Lay's. She bought Pringles. And like, you know, and I had a bad experience with that. But I remember seeing on TV how people would treat the Pringles chips as like duck lips.
Yes.
And I would put it in my mouth. I was like, these don't taste that bad when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And
there you go. That is it. Yeah. That is it. Yes. Exactly what we're talking about. I love that.
So it's so weird seeing everything come back full circle.
You were doing feeding therapy on yourself and you didn't even know it.
I didn't even know. But Pringles, that's not, they're pretty tasty. It's not that hard.
They are. Yeah. But you wouldn't believe how many kids, you know, foods that are, you would think, oh, they eat Lay's, they will eat this Pringle, but they won't. They won't. It looks different. It looks different, right? So it really is challenging for them.
Definitely. We better get sponsored for this. So Lay's and Pringles.
Lay's and Pringles, call us up. Thank you.
But okay. Anyways, going back to the topic. So for feeding it, so we hear the term feeding therapy, and I think we mentioned this before on this podcast, that I never thought that you should bring a therapist, you know, into a child's life, especially if they're a picky eater. Again, that's just something parents just try to live with. Mm-hmm. So for everybody listening to this podcast, what are some cues for a parent to know when they should ask a doctor or when they should even engage a doctor about feeding therapy?
Yeah. So maybe you listen to this podcast and you said, oh man, I took a few things away from that and I'm going to try that. I'm going to try to switch this experience from negative to positive and try some of these strategies. So you've tried it, you know, you've done your best. You feel like you've tried everything and it's just not working. You know, nothing's really working for you. Maybe your child is losing foods, right? So they had a specific number of foods in their diet and all of a sudden they're rapidly losing a bunch. They're shutting down. There are specific times in a child's life where they go through cognitive shifts and they become more aware and they can lose foods. So if they're losing foods and not gaining other foods, that's, you know, a little bit scary and a little bit concerning. And then what if those eating habits are affecting nutrition, growth, weight gain?
Yes.
Those are all very serious medical issues that you need to talk to your doctor about. And if it's because of picky eating, it's something that can be treated by an occupational therapist. So it's definitely something to talk to your doctor about when those things are, you know, when your strategies are not working or your child is, you know, they're medically being affected by the picky eating.
If there's a regression in their diet, that's usually the first step. Are there any other ones? Because I just don't want parents to come to the point where, okay, my child's gained 10 pounds. Obviously, that's a gross exaggeration.
Sure.
So are there any other preventative things we can keep an eye out for so it doesn't reach that stage? But we can still engage a doctor or an occupational therapist, as you said.
Yeah. So usually we treat kids that are in that picky eater range, so third year less foods, or if they have a big disparity between, oh, I don't have any fruits and vegetables, but I have a ton of carbs. So if you're not getting that balanced diet, so maybe a child's gaining weight just fine, but they're eating only carbs and they're not getting the right amount of nutrition, right? If you're noticing that their rigidity is so high that you can't feed them different brands of food, take them out to eat, those types of things, those are all a little bit concerning. We all have preferences and that's okay. Definitely. Right? Like we all like things more than others, but if it's causing a huge meltdown tantrum all the time, right? Like your kid is melting down when a food is cut a little bit differently, that's concerning. That means that they probably have some underlying sensory issues that are affecting their ability to engage with the food.
Wow. Does that happen often? Children having meltdowns when it comes to food from the parents you've spoken to?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have parents say, you know, my child is screaming and crying. We're spending hours and hours at the table. Right. And that's, again, we've said it a million times, but so stressful. So stressful.
It's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking to hear because, as you said, family eating is a social experience. And well, we said in this podcast, parents shouldn't be holding these expectations for their children. You know, we're all human. We can't help it. We all envision, you know, having a happy family, eating at the table together. Everybody's just, you know, going away, eating their food. Mm-hmm. So from what you just said, it's not always sunshine and rainbows for parents.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You want to go in with it, to go in with the best mindset possible, but you're right. You are only human. And you may be disappointed. And that's why it is probably time when you've tried everything and nothing's working to talk to your doctor about therapy.
Definitely. So for the parents who haven't even touched occupational therapists or even thought about OT, to kind of give them a glimpse into your world, what does feeding therapy look like? That's even weird for me to say because I don't even know.
Yeah. So it's different for every child. And it's also, you know, it does vary a bit between therapists. If you're seeing either an OT or a speech pathologist for feeding therapy, usually our approaches are fairly similar. I believe. And we usually try to use approaches that are safe, comfortable, and fun for the child. It depends on the age of the child. So a younger child, we're using mostly play-based strategies. For older children, we're using strategies where we're preparing food with them and having them take an active role in that routine. And we're trying to make connections between foods. Oh, this food is orange, and so is this food. This food's crunchy, and so is this food. And so we're trying to make food safe by making connections. We also might have to treat some underlying oromotor skill, strength, and coordination deficits. Wow. It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. So did the limited food repertoire, did that cause the child to not develop their oromotor skills, or did decreased oromotor skills contribute to a decreased food repertoire? You know, so it can go either way. So if there's those underlying oromotor skill deficits, we have to treat those as well.
Somewhere within that mix, this caught my eye. You said for the older individuals, older children, you want them to take more of an active role. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah. So a lot of times I have them in therapy sessions engage in making the food with me. So, and this can work on, you know, sequencing, following multi-step directions, things like that as well. So we're targeting multiple skills, but they're also interacting with the food, smelling it, touching it usually at the same time while they're preparing it. So it's a nice, comfortable way and social way to engage with the food for those older kiddos.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. You have a lot on your plate as an occupational therapist trying. As you said, that whole chicken and the egg aspect, that's only one piece of the puzzle. There are also sensory issues, which you were talking about, which can come into play. Maybe a child has sensory aversions. That's why they didn't eat this. And then that's why they now have a lack in oral motor strength.
Right.
I can just see all of it compounding, and there's no way for a parent to understand those things.
Right.
There's no way.
And that's the other piece with the therapy, is that we are continuously teaching the parent, having the parent come to sessions and engage with us, play with the food with us. A lot of times we have the child lead both the parent and the therapist in the session, so that they're kind of in charge, right? It's really fun that way. And then we're also having the family do things at home, therapy sessions, family meals, things like that, to make their home have that positive eating experience as well.
I love how you frame that. You know, you're trying to engage the parents within your practice as well. While occupational therapists such as yourself, you guys are amazing, and you can do wonders for children out there, and you already have. You can't do without the parents. You can't. You need to get their buy-in, and, you know, parents need to buy into you. And based on this whole podcast, I think, I don't know, at least for your case, your parents are in good hands. I'm not saying,
Oh, thank you. We're a team. We are all a team. The child, me, and the family, we're a team. And if we didn't act as a team, we would not make the progress that we do.
Definitely. Yeah. But I know sometimes for a lot of parents out there, occupational therapy might not be available or accessible, especially within their areas. So what exactly can they do? Because, you know, this isn't just a one-off occupation or something they can just put off. A feeding is a very big aspect of the child's life, and it will follow them all throughout, because they need to eat, they need to survive, they need to get that well-rounded diet to stay healthy.
Yeah.
So how can parents still support their children if they don't have that physical access to these services?
Right. So obviously with social media, we have access to a lot more information than we used to. So, you know, you can go on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube or whatever it may be and find a lot of information about, you know, feeding strategies. Also, me personally, this is a big passion of mine, and I treat quite a few kids with these needs. And so I decided that I wanted to launch a live picky eaters course, which is for parents. For parents, and teaching them strategies and helping them understand their child a little bit better. Why is this happening? And what can I do at home to help them if I don't have access to therapy or I can't afford therapy? So that's the whole goal of that. I'm super excited. It's actually launching in late April. I'm currently enrolling And I think it's going to be so much fun and hopefully really, really helpful.
Definitely. Just plugging this in, we're going to be posting a lot of updates on our social media leading up to these courses, which Candace here is going to be hosting. Super, super helpful. You know, I really think the community really needs this because a lot of people live in remote areas or they don't necessarily have the financial means to be able to go to occupational therapist services. So I believe things like this are so important. What are the things of which you'll be doing within your, you know, your, is it, can I call it teletherapy? Is this not technically
teletherapy because there's not direct contact with the child. It's just with the parent, which gives us a lot more wiggle room, right? We don't have to worry about, you know, some of the things that come along with teletherapy. It's basically a course for the parents. And so my whole goal there is to help you understand what's going on with your child specifically, to talk about your home environment and what changes you can make, and then to give you very specific strategies on how to change up the food, change up your interactions with your child, make it a fun, low stress, interactive experience, and hopefully add quite a few foods to your child's diet. That's the whole goal here.
Definitely. So it's kind of like a one-on-one mentor slash coaching type of thing.
Yeah. So I'm actually doing a small class size for the live. And then after 3 follow-up one-on-one phone calls or emails about how it's going and how we can change things to help people
so
moving
amazing.
Forward.
Oh yeah, my gosh.
I hope it's helpful. I really do.
No, definitely. I think, you know, you're empowering parents out there and it's even less pressure on them because I was under the impression that it was like teletherapy. You'd be working with the kid through the phone or through a video chat. But now that you're just empowering parents with the tools they need, you know, parents know their children best. And that's why services like these are so, so important because every child's different. And while you said you can just go online, you can go on Pinterest and you can find all these different resources, sometimes they might not fit for your child. So being able to talk to a specialist like Candace here, it really will set you light years apart from you just trying to research on your own. You
know, yeah, I hope so. I want to make it very individualized to what the people who are taking the class truly need for their children. So
definitely. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that wraps up today's podcast. Thank you so much. This was honestly a pleasure to be able to hold this conversation with you. I think this is going to benefit so many parents out there. Honestly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast. I really love talking about this. So thank you.
Definitely. Hopefully we have you on more podcasts.
Yeah, me too. I hope so too.
Yes. Just before we sign off though, we're going to put in a few shameless plugs. So again, you can find Candace on Instagram. I don't think you have a website yet. Do you?
No, yeah. I'm currently working on launching the website. Coming soon.
Okay, coming soon. So we'll be posting updates on that on our social media. So be sure to follow Sense of Minds on Instagram, on Facebook. We also have a little private support group for parents where we also post resources and we'll be posting her links as well. So that's Sense of Minds, SENSOMINDS. She's just waiting on the other line. She's like, when can I get off? I'm so sorry. I just realized how awkward this is. But but again, if you want to follow Candace on her social media on Instagram, it's nurture_OT, right?
You got it.
Okay, so NURTURE_OT. Yes, I can spell, folks. Anyways, that's all from me. Be sure to stay updated. We'll be sure to keep you posted on when her courses are going to be going live and when you guys can sign up. Anyways, that's enough from me. This is the Sensory Corner. My name is Mark. Have a good night, guys. Bye. Before you guys sign off, I do want to provide a few more updates with respect to the Picky Eaters course, which was brought up at the end of this episode, just so you guys can make a more well-informed decision as to whether or not it's a good fit for you and your child. Anyways, the Nurture OT Live Picky Eaters course is a 4-hour live instructional session with Candace Peterson herself, alongside other parents of whom are sensory parents and have their own picky eaters. I think this is a very underrated aspect about the course just because you're able to connect with other parents who are going through the thick of it just as you are. And because of this, it gives you that sense of community and makes you feel like you're not alone in your struggle to help your child push through that picky eating phase. On top of this though, if I've known one thing about Candace after working with her over the past 2 months and really talking to her on a weekly basis, is that she truly, truly cares about you as a person. She wants to know what your needs are, but more so what your child's needs are and how we can work alongside your child to help them reach their feeding goals. So she'll be scheduling 3 follow-up phone calls with each and every parent within the course such that you guys are able to make the right adjustments towards your feeding plans with your child so that they can hit their goals much more quicker. For practicality purposes as well, the course sizes will be purposefully kept low in order for Candace to be able to cater to everybody's needs and answer your questions. To kind of go over what the course exactly entails, it goes over a lot of topics which we covered in this podcast. However, the main ones of which you'll be going over is how can you understand your child's sensory systems and how exactly do they impact their eating habits as of now. Other topics she'll be covering is how to understand your picky eater. How can you empathize with your child so that you can see the world through their eyes? And more so, she'll be giving you guys strategies on how to reduce stress at home and how you can change the environment to support a positive social experience during mealtime. And most importantly, we can't forget about the strategies which you guys need to be able to expose your child to new foods and promote long-term success and a long-term positive relationship with food. Anyways, that's all the information which I have. Be sure to give her a follow on Nurture OT. You've heard it a bunch of times, and that's where you'll be able to stay updated. And the reason why we're partnering with Candace and promoting this Picky Eaters course towards you guys is because her mission really does fall in line with SensoMind's values. And it's the fact that we want to make sensory resources, sensory services, and ultimately sensory products as accessible as possible to every single parent with a sensory or special needs child, regardless of your financial status. Her course right now, and hear this, is only $50. Yes, you heard me right, 50. I think that's an amazing deal for what you will be able to achieve and the things your child will be able to attain alongside this course with respect to their feeding goals. Also, one last thing, as part of the partnership between SensoMinds and Nurture OT, we've also collaborated with Candace to create a little cool downloadable PDF you guys can print off and put onto your fridge. And it's basically going over all the key reminders you parents need to keep in mind in order to maintain a positive mealtime experience for your child. Very quick reminders so that you can keep them on track with your feeding therapies. All the information will be placed into the description of this podcast, but it will also be placed as updates on our social media handles. So be sure to follow us on social media on Instagram and Facebook. Search us up. That's Nurture OT, NURTURE_OT, and Senso Minds. You've just been tuned into the Sensory Corner, a podcast surrounding all conversations, sensory, parenting, and occupation related. My name is Mark. I was your host for today, and this podcast is being brought to you guys by Senso Minds. SensoMinds is dedicated to designing and developing new, fun, and engaging sensory-stimulating toys for your child to be able to gain the sensory stimulation they need to best integrate into the world around them. If you're curious and want to learn more, want to buy one of our sensory kits, sensory chew necklaces, or even our weighted blankets, be sure to search us up or go to our website via www.sensominds.com. Or give us a follow on our social media handles via Facebook, Instagram, or Pinterest by simply typing in SensoMinds. That's SensoMinds. If you liked what you hear and you like the information on this podcast, be sure to give us a little subscribe by hitting that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. And also, leave us a 5-star review. It really does help us increase our reach and helps us connect with more SLPs, more OTs, and more sensory parents of whom will benefit from the information of which is being dished out on these podcasts when we bring on these specialists to talk to. Anyways, that's all for me. My name is Mark, signing out. This is Sensory Corner.